I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to minute 72 of season 6 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Richard Dunham of the Ghibli Minute. Welcome back to the show, Richard.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
I'm glad that you're able to come back again today. To continue listening to the way that Potter is trying to tear apart George's soul. That's more or less the way it is. So minute 72 begins with Potter continuing to try to reassure George that he's not dreaming. And ends with George actually getting quite excited and being all ready to jump on board. So yesterday we ended things with Potter making George an offer that most people could not refuse, and including George. George is not ready to refuse it. He's in so much shock of this offer that, you know, he begins to, you know, have delusions that maybe, you know, someone is behind him and that Potter's not talking to him. You know, that he's dreaming. I mean, again, if someone were to invite me to a meeting and tell me that they're going to be paying me $500,000 or the equivalent of $500,000 to do the same work that I'm already good at. So, you know, okay, I'd be shocked too. So
have you ever been like offered like a raise or like been recruited away from a job or anything like that?
I have. I've been offered. But the loyalty to my day job, is too great for me. You know, I've been doing the same day job for 27 years. So, you know, for me, I've been offered to go to other places and do the same thing. But, you know, sometimes when you feel that a place is your home, you don't want to leave it. Doesn't matter what they're going to offer you.
Even if it was 10 times.
Yeah, I would like to believe that is true, because again, I feel, you know, I enjoy what I do, and I enjoy who, you know, the people I work with, and I, again, the place feels home to me. So, you know, yeah, I would like to believe that. Like I said, I've had offers, serious offers, and I never took any of them because it wasn't worth it, you know. Yeah, it's the way we all are. Everyone
real life George themselves. Bailey here.
There you go. I don't work at the saving of the building and loan though. I have less of an effect on Bedford Falls. How's that? And you know, so it ended yesterday with George basically saying, "You do know who you're talking to. I'm George Bailey." And he goes, and so Potter responds, "Yes, George Bailey." And he continues today by saying, "Yeah, George Bailey, whose ship has just come in, provided he has enough brains to climb aboard." I mean, even with his, Lionel Barrymore delivers these lines so well. And, you know, when they wrote this, they wrote the character of Potter amazingly. They gave him such great, you know, his dialogue is very deep.
Yeah.
You know, but
there's very, you know, that kind of, there's a thrust and then like a twist, right? Like
that's
every statement he makes, there's like, you know, there's an extra barb hidden in there. Yeah.
That's right. It's your ship has just come in, as long as you have enough brains to climb aboard. You know, it's like, what? You know, So do you know the idea of what it means to have a ship come in?
Oh, so I'm familiar with the meaning of the phrase, but I don't know. Are you gonna tell us like the origin of it?
Well,
I
the
don't even
origin,
know.
it's funny. The origin is very simplistic. It's the idea that merchants, would send goods aboard ships to be
Oh, and
sold,
it was
and they would get money
good.
back for, when the ships come back. So the idea was is okay, you send a ship out with I don't know, some sort of treasure, and it comes back with money. So that's the idea of that your ship coming in, meaning your ship has returned with the money. You sent it with something else, and now it's back with money.
And it was very much a, it was kind of a gamble, right?
Yes.
Because anything could happen to, like,
That's right.
it's gone for months at a time, right? And so you don't know if it's been sunk or, they weren't able to make the trades that you were expecting them to make or something. So
Right,
yeah, that
which I
makes
think is
sense.
part of the whole idea here, because the what Potter is basically saying to George is that you've been gambling all your life with the money that you take home every week from the building and loan. And now here, look on the horizon. There is a ship coming in that is going to be giving you all this money. It's here. You've been waiting all your life for this ship to be here, and now it's here. Now you just have to be smart enough to actually agree and get on board the ship and take what's being offered to you. So I like the play on words, the way that this is done here. Even with the different jibes or jabs that Potter is giving throughout, by basically saying he's implying that you don't have that you that you're not that smart and you just need to be smart right
Yeah.
now. By implying something like that, why does he, from a business perspective, why does he want it? He wants him just to be able to crush the building and loan, which is something he's been trying to do for decades.
It's worth $20,000 a year for at least 3 years to
That's
do it.
right.
I guess by the time those
Well,
three
we don't
years
know
are
yet
up.
for it's for 3 years. That we're not sure to start. That
Oh,
we're not sure
okay.
yet. In this minute,
Jumping
we'll come
ahead.
across that. Yeah,
Spoilers.
no, that's fine. You're jumping in just slightly, but I mean, we'll get there in a second. And then his response is, "Holy mackerel!" because I guess that goes back to what you were saying, yesterday about your show being family friendly. So, the movies in the 40s were much more family friendly from that perspective, where you can say "Holy mackerel," because if this was today, the colorful metaphors that the character would be using at this point would be quite high.
Yeah.
And then George goes into his natural mode and says, "Okay, well, what about the building and loan?" And Potter just looks at him with disgust after he says that. He goes, "Oh, confounded man, are you afraid of success?
You afraid of success?
I'm offering you a 3-year contract of $20,000 a year starting today. Is it a deal or isn't it?" So, I mean, for me, have you ever heard the word confounded? The phrase? It's a very, it was,
Confounded?
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never, I don't think I've ever
Confounded?
used it in a sentence before.
Really?
I mean,
Sorry?
it's basically, damn it. That's what it more or less
Yeah,
means.
yeah.
It's used when expressing anger, frustration, or surprise. So in this case, I believe with Potter, you could say that it's frustration. He's frustrated that George is not that simple to buy off.
Yeah, so confound is like to mean to confuse or to block or to stymie, right? So it's something confound it is, yeah, curse it or to damn it, yeah. This confound this, you could say this damn telephone, use this confounded telephone or something like that, yeah. I mean, I've seen this movie. This movie was so much part of my childhood. So when you ask, like, have you ever heard this phrase before? I don't know if it's like the first time I heard it was in this movie, but I heard it like as a child, like, so, okay, you know, because this movie was on. So, you know, I don't know if I encountered it elsewhere before this, but definitely probably every piece of dialogue is kind of burned into my brain from having seen this movie growing up so often.
Right. Okay. I mean, that makes, I mean, obviously whenever I ask, in general, I ask someone if they're familiar with a phrase, you know, my point is outside of this movie, not here, because it's part of the dialogue, but you're right. When it comes to that, I mean, this is actually a good point then to ask you, what is your history with this movie?
Yeah, like I said, I mean, this is something, you know, when it was always on TV when I was growing up, especially when, you know, the copyright was lost and it was that period, like in the 70s and 80s, when, you know, TV stations could just throw it on without paying any royalties. So I think my early memories is of, you know, my dad would set up like a gift wrapping station in his bedroom for like a few weeks before Christmas. And, you know, he'd wander in there and there'd be wrapping paper all, you know, there'd be a card table set up and wrapping paper covered with wrapping paper. And occasionally, like, he would be wrapping something that wasn't mine, you know, so I could go in there. And this movie was usually on in the background. So that's kind of formed one of my core memories of Christmas as having that on during the kind of the family holiday activities.
Oh, wow. Very cool. And is it something that you watch on a yearly basis at this point? Or you don't need to because you know it all by heart?
I don't need, I've like all of them. I've got all of them. I could probably recite it from memory. So I did sit down and watch it again, the other day in preparation for this podcast, but I usually, you know, watch pieces of it here and there, and like maybe not every year, but every couple of years I'll sit down and watch the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's very watchable. Oh, and once it's sure. on, you know, if I catch it on, I'll just sucked in. Yeah.
Makes sense. I can't blame you for that. That's for sure. And basically, we have Potter use a phrase, is it a deal or isn't it? And that got my mind thinking, you know, about the game show, Let's Make a Deal.
Yeah.
Okay. What's
deal or no deal? Or
No, not deal or no deal. I'm talking about Let's Make a Deal.
Game show. Yeah.
I'm going back to the 70s here, you know, or 60s, 70s. What? I mean, you're familiar with the show with Monty Hall, Let's Make a Deal, right?
Yeah.
So it was a show that ran from 1963 to 1976. Okay. How many episodes do you think they had of the game show in those 14 seasons? No, 13 and a half seasons, I guess you could say.
I'm going to guess about 1,000.
There were almost 3,800 episodes.
3,800.
Yeah, okay. There was 3,784. Which, if you put in that into the inflation calculator, no, I'm just kidding.
Well, I just like, how many episodes did they do a year? Then that's like 3,800 divided by what, 13?
Yeah,
they're doing almost 300 episodes a year.
That's right. Well, again, five days a week. That's what syndicated shows do, don't they? Or not syndicated. Yeah. That's what you know, daily game shows. I guess that makes sense. I mean, if you were to divide it by 13 seasons, so you get 291 episodes a season. So I guess that sort of makes sense. You know, because yeah, if you were to divide that by 52, so it's
actually a little more than 5 days a week.
Yeah. Maybe they had like specials. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Don't know. And then it was syndicated for 6 years from 1971 to 77, where they had another 281 episodes, only, you know, over 6 years. That's not very many. And then it was brought back in 1981 for one season, and they had 195 episodes. And then it was brought back again from 1984 to 1986 for 340 episodes. And then they
brought who, were these do you know who were the hosts? Was anybody we would know for this?
It was it revivals? It was mostly I'm pretty sure it was Monty Hall was brought back
Oh really?
I mean, you had the four people who have been the hosts throughout the syndication, and again, there's even more than what I just mentioned so far. So you had Monty Hall, Bob Hilton, Billy Bush, and Wayne Brady. Wayne Brady does the modern version of it.
Okay.
But I mean, that's just a lot of episodes that they made of it. And it's been running since 2009 right now, and they have over 2,000 episodes that have come out with that. So yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, the whole idea of Let's Make a Deal was you have all the people in the audience and they give them choices. You know, that people usually would dress up. It was like a Halloween extravaganza. Everyone is always coming, dressed up in various outrageous, unique costumes, stuff like that, to be, chosen to be one of the traitors. Traitors with a D, not traitors with a T, I mean, the whole idea is that the host walks through the audience and, picks different members of the studio audience and, he offers them something of value and gives them a choice of whether to keep it or to exchange it for something else. But they don't know what they're exchanging it for. You know, the idea is that the item that they're exchanging it for is hidden, either behind a door or behind a in a box, whatever it is. So they don't know. So it's just a question of trying to decide, if you want something that's, do you think that what we're going to offer you is something of equal or greater value to the prize that you get? Which I some of the episodes that I recall seeing were pretty funny, where people, would end up getting some really, really strange things at the end. Like people would get a goat, to take home or something like that.
Like martini's goat.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Which we talked about, few weeks ago. It's very strange that they have the dog and the goat. So, yeah, I mean, that again, so his phrase of, is it a deal or isn't it? Just really made it, it made me think of that show.
So are you aware of the Monty Hall problem? Is it?
I'm aware of the Monty Hall problem. Would you like to discuss it?
So as we're talking, so this is, I guess, I'm just looking at the Wikipedia article about it, but it's kind of based on, it's a probability problem. You have three doors and you pick one door and you have the prize is behind one of those doors, and behind the other two doors, there's not a prize. It's simple as that. So if you pick any door, you have a 1/3 chance of getting the prize, right?
Right.
On your first pick. So you make a pick and then it's revealed one of the other doors that you didn't pick is opened. And the problem, should you switch? You have the option to switch doors.
Right.
At that point, after one door is opened, should you switch? Right. Does the probability change if you switch? And the answer is yes. You have a better chance of winning if you switch after the reveal of that one door.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a counterintuitive result, but doesn't really make sense to me. Even I think I've had it explained a couple of times to me, and even as like a math major, I didn't really get it. So probably wasn't a very good math major.
I always love how in different science problems and different things that you see, how pop culture gets into it. Like, and this is a perfect example of that. That they they name a paradox, you know, in the probability theory, the Monty Hall problem. You know, it's like,
yeah,
why not? You know, it goes,
why,
it goes.
Yeah, why name it after the author of the paper? That would make
right.
sense.
That's right. No, but the author of the paper is probably a Monty Hall fan, you know, which makes yeah. sense. I mean, I still remember the fact that, you know, I think I heard a comedian say this at some point or something like that, that, you know, a lot of sci-fi from even the 60s, 70s, 80s, and even now, it pushes forward, it advances technology, because someone thought of an idea. Even, okay, let's even go back to a simplistic one. You know, the Star Trek TV show in the 60s, okay, the idea that you stand in front of a door and the door will automatically open. Now, back then, they didn't have that technology. They had people opening the doors, you know, from behind, but making it seem as if it's something futuristic. And you know, there was some kid that saw this in the TV show and says, hey, that is a great idea. I'm going to invent that. And now we have, you know, you can stand in front of a door and the door automatically opens. You know.
That's right.
I will never forget. This was 30 years ago. I was with a friend of mine at like a rest stop. You know, we were on a cross country trip, and we went in to go use the bathrooms, and when you stand away from the urinal, you know, so the it would automatically flush. You know, and he turns to me and goes, "Wow, I feel like I'm in Star Trek." You know. You know, science fiction pushes technology forward. You know, that's what it comes down to. And it's just really, really cool to see that. And then,
what is your read on Mr. Potter's like servant here, butler or valet? He's like standing.
He reminds me of Lurch because he doesn't say a word.
Bit. Yeah.
He's just standing there the entire time. This entire movie, he does
not
have
his
one
hand like. He's got his hand like clutching part of Mr. Potter's chair, like the back of his chair. It's kind of like it's weird, like comforting kind of pose or something.
That's right. He's saying to himself, "You're offering this guy $20,000. I get $1,000. What the hell's wrong with you?" Yeah, it's very possible. Yeah, what do you think of him?
He has to listen to Potter, like, do this all day, every day, right? He has to, like, how much poison has he been, like, witness to and had to kind of swallow, like, without saying anything? I mean, I don't know, does he, doesn't look happy, right? He looks pretty dour-faced gentleman, right? So,
well, again, he's dour-faced because they just offered George a hell of a lot more money than he gets. It's a good reason for him to get upset. I think of him as a henchman. You know, this is Jaws or Odd Job or Mayday or someone, you know, who's standing there, you know, waiting for this Bond villain to, you know, to need his services in getting rid of this
he does, I mean, he
meddling,
doesn't do anything
this meddling
to
kid.
George, though.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
He's just because he hasn't been given, you know, the order to sick him.
Yeah, he's
chopper
with bees in his mouth, so that when he barks, they shoot bees at you.
There you go.
So we see him. I think the most we see him do is like, you know, when later in the movie we see. Potter like give him orders to like move his chair around, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even though Potter can stand up on his own.
I'm assuming it's the same guy. I wonder what's the tenure like. Is there a lot of turnover in the Potter household, or does he pay enough for people to kind of swallow this garbage?
I have a feeling it is the same actor throughout the entire movie, even back in 1919 when we saw him.
Yeah.
So this is, I mean, again, we've talked about this numerous times over the last few months, but Potter is ageless. You know, he was known as Old Man Potter 20 something years ago, and he's still Old Man Potter. You know, he definitely has has taken a potion, or maybe he's you know, maybe he maybe the picture on the wall is like the picture of Dorian Gray. You know, it's the picture of Harry
Yeah,
Potter, of
there you
Harry
go.
Potter, the picture of Henry Potter. You know, even though maybe he's not a muggle. You know, that is possible also. You know, he uses that black magic to keep himself young enough, but still looking old. That would be my guess. And you know, so maybe this magic works for whoever's his henchman is behind him.
Oh yeah, maybe that's why he's the loyalty comes from, hey, you can take a sip of
That's
this immortality potion.
right. That's right. That's right. Makes sense. At this point, George staggers back a little bit and goes, "Well, Mr. Potter, I know I ought to jump at the chance, but I just I wonder if it would be possible for you to give me 24 hours to think it over." And Potter jumps on this right away because he believes he's got this, you know, in the bag. And he goes, "Sure. You go on home. Talk about it to your wife. I'd like to do that. Yeah, in the meantime, I'll drop the papers. All right, sir. Okay, George." And then Potter puts out his hand, and George shakes his hand and goes, "Okay, Mr. Potter."
I would see just the his expression just fall right at the end of
That's
the
right.
minute.
That's right. Because, you know, it makes you wonder, is Potter the devil? You know, is George realizes he's about to make a deal with the devil. And now when Potter says to him, "You go on home and talk about it with to the wife," is this a suggestion or is this an assumption?
What do you mean?
Is he telling George, "Go home and speak to your wife about it," or is he saying, "Yeah, that's a good idea, go home and speak to your wife about it," meaning that because George says he needs 24 hours, you know, is he subliminally telling him, "Go speak to your wife, who will definitely want to get this money," or is he already assuming that that's what George was going to do with his 24 hours?
I think
And he's
I had my. My read is kind of the latter that he's like, yeah, do whatever you need to do. I assume, yeah, like, yeah, pet your dog, you know, consult with your pastor or whatever, you know, talk about it with your wife, do whatever you need to do to come to your decision.
just
That's
come
my
back
read on
and
it.
you know, and sign
And be
the
ready to
paper.
sign.
That's right. Okay, that makes sense. Because again, Potter is a businessman. You know, he knows how to do business, and he's thrown aback by why is it that he can do business and take over everyone except for the Baileys. The Baileys are the only people who never fall for anything that he's trying to do. I mean, I like the way that he's trying to find a way to convince to bring George over to the other side, that type of thing. And that's pretty much all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else for this minute, Richard?
Nope.
All right, great. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, uplifting or inspirational story edition, where my guests will give some sort of anecdote, adventure, misadventure, story, something that's happened to them over the course of their life that was an inspirational or uplifting moment for them. So, Richard, do you have a story for us?
Yeah, it's hard to come up with something, but I do have a story of some kindness from strangers. This was back in 1993, during you can look up the March 93. You can look up in Wikipedia, look up 1993 Storm of the Century. There's an actual article about the insane snowstorm that happened in March of 93. And it was this weekend we decided to some friend of mine and I decided to drive from Chicago to Ohio to see the Grateful Dead. So we just seen I'm a big Grateful Dead fan, so a lot of my memories are about Grateful Dead. But in this particular case, we drove out to Richfield, and the snow was getting worse and worse. But I'm like, they're not going to cancel the show. That's never happened. You know, it wouldn't happen. I was young and naive. I was like, oh, it's the Grateful Dead. Nothing can stop the Grateful Dead. But they did, in fact, cancel the show because the weather was so bad.
Those bastards.
And those bastards. So, and we were kind of driving around. We had, we saw people like other people like get stuck like in ditches on the side of the road, and just like the masses of the Grateful Dead fans, the Deadheads, were like helping each other like get out of ditches and stuff. And we were looking for a place to spend the night, right? So this is back before the internet, you just kind of hit the road and kind of figured things out along the way. So yeah, we didn't
have cell phones, no internet. I remember exactly. Those days.
There's no, yeah, you couldn't like, you had to like have like a, it's very rare to book a hotel ahead of time, especially like a roadside motel kind of thing, right?
That's right.
You would just like, you know, drive until you saw a hotel like on an exit and pull off and see if they had a room. Yeah. So we were driving around trying to find a hotel. And because of this storm, we did stop at one hotel, and it was a complete zoo. It had been completely overrun by Deadheads. I mean, there was just like the usual kind of bazaar, like marketplace that happens like in the parking lot of Grateful Dead shows.
Mm-hmm.
It was happening like in the hallways of this hotel. Like the staff were completely overrun. They had no control of the situation. We're like, okay, this is fun. This is like a weird and interesting experience, but there's no way we're going to find a place to sleep here. So we went back out on the road, and it was just, again, the storm of the century, is complete blizzard. I think we were going down some road, and like we tried to turn around or something, but we wound up driving off the road and the car got stuck. And so we were like, okay, we can either, you know, we can sit in the car, I guess, try to spend the night in the car, or try something else. And I think there was one guy with us who was starting to freak out quite a bit. But my friend kind of walked to the nearest house and to see if they could like help us out in some way. And they actually took us in and let us stay the night. There were these dairy farmers in the middle of rural Ohio. It turned out to be the nicest couple. And we're like, they heard what we were doing. It's like, oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. You know, it's great that you guys are young people are having adventures. And they, you know, they fed us breakfast in the morning and kind of showed us around like the dairy farm. And we're like, oh, wow, that's an insane amount of work that I would never be able to do. So I really admire you guys. So I wound up being, you know, like the fun adventures, which is the whole point of going out on the road when you're young like that. So I want to thank, you know, I always appreciate that the couple that took in like a bunch of
deadheads,
you know, strangers, yeah, deadheads, some unwashed hippies for the night. So very much, they were very lovely couple.
Oh wow, very cool. Thank you very much for sharing that story with us. So you want to tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, you can find me at my website, dunhamrc.com. That has links to my two podcasts, Ghibli Minute and Akita Minute. It also has links to my social accounts on X, Twitter, Mastodon, and Blue Sky.
All right, very good. And while you do that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe to any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.